All right, ladies and gentlemen, time for the Crime Report, sponsored by Crime Stoppers. Suffolk, 1-800-220-TIPS, 220-8477. That's where all calls are kept confidential. Monetary reward of up to $5,000, usually in place. And that for information that will lead to an arrest. Joe Jacklin, retired sergeant, NYPD, former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad, current adjunct professor at John Jay College, author of the bestseller, The Criminal Investigative Function of Avenue Investigators, third edition. And a highly decorated member in the day as far as the NYPD, including the most notable of awards, the Department Medal of Valor, the aforementioned Sarge Joseph Jackalone. Sir, how are you?
Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I am well, my friend, well. Before we get rolling here, Joe, give me your experiences as far as that dreadful day 20 years ago. Whereabouts as far as what you were doing. I'm sure you're right in the middle of things here, but give the audience a little recollection as far as thoughts.
Yeah, no, I can't believe it's been 20 years already. I mean, the time has just gone by so fast, but it's something that is ingrained in your memory that, you know, no matter what happens, you'll never forget it. I mean, you'll know exactly where you were, what you were doing, what happened next, and everything else. It was just one of those points in history. And I think that, you know, depending on how old you are, there's different points of history, right? Yet, for the younger generation, you have the Challenger explosion. You have the JFK assassination for people a bit older than us. But 9/11 was our historic ingraining in our memory that we had. My story was a little different than most of the other cops. I had just gotten done with shoulder surgery, and I was on the front steps going into the house, and the you know, we heard it on 1010 Winds about what had happened. And at first, they said it was an accident. If you recall, they said you know, it looks like a small plane hit the World Trade Center. I'll never forget that. They said a small plane hit the World Trade Center. And you say to yourself, okay, you know, it could be possible that this could have happened, right? You know, maybe a wind blew a small plane, you know, sightseeing, whatever it may be. And then you go on, you put on the television, you see what's going on, and you're like, that is not a small plane. And then as you're watching this thing, you see the other explode. So right then and there, I remember I looked at my wife and say, you know, this is not, you know, this is not an accident. There's something's going on here. So I try to call in to the sick desk, right? Because once you're out sick, you're that's it. You know, you're out sick, and the lines were down. If you recall, the Verizon Center was right there downtown, and it got wiped out, and there was communications were done. So I finally was able to get a hold of somebody at the medical division, and I told them what my story was. Listen, you said shoulder surgery. This is what's going on. I said I want to go back to work. So they said, you can't go back to work. You know, you just had the surgery. I said, all right, listen, put me back. And I went back to work. I got in my car and I drove to, at the time I was a sergeant in the 7-3 precinct in Brownsville, East New York. And I remember there was long lines of cars along on the Southern State Parkway. I was driving on the shoulder, driving there, trying to get to, trying to get to the Bell Parkway, and the state police were pushing people off of the highway. They were pushing them because they wanted to clear all of the roads to Manhattan. I remember they had a line of state police, and they were pushing everybody up the Cross Island Parkway. And I got up to the point where they stopped me on the shoulder, and I showed them my ID cards, whatever. I said, I'm off to work, and they just let me go right down to the Bell Parkway. And I got down on the Bell Parkway. I got into the precinct in Brooklyn, and things were like you see something in a movie, right? There's, you know, there's basically like organized chaos. People are running back and forth, gathering gear, picking things up, getting gassing up vehicles. The whole nine yards. The TVs were on. They were watching what was happening as it was going on. I remember when I came into the desk, the lieutenant, the captain, everybody was standing at the desk. They were watching what was happening on the TV, and here I am in my shoulder sling and the at this point, you don't know what to do, whatever. So I just put my shirt on, and I sat at the desk. I took over the desk because what happened was we had so many, few people that they didn't know how many people we needed to send. And this was before, the real things started happening where, buildings started collapsing and everything else. So they, were gathering people. People were setting off in vans. And you know what? When you're watching the men and women getting dressed, just without any forethought of anything of their own safety, whatever, just getting in these vans and just going, you look back and you say to yourself, wow. I mean, it's still one of those things where you just like can't believe that this was happening. Like, oh, this was happening right in front of you. And that, then you hear about the Pentagon getting it. And then you say to yourself, I'm like, what's next, right? You don't know what was going to happen. And, that's pretty much, I remember seeing that evening, the devastation that had happened there. And it was just, it was overwhelming. I mean, it was just one of those things where, like I said, you just never forget it.
Great recollection, Joe. You're right there. For me, I was starting a job locally. I was about to head into a radio station, WRV on Riverhead, and I was doing some stringer stuff, and I was actually getting ready to get into the city. And lo and behold, getting dressed, ready to roll. TV was on. I'll never forget. Eyewitness News on, as a matter of fact. I forgot the anchor involved there, but it was unbelievable. It really was. And, of course, I wasn't going anywhere. Young kids and everything else, wife at home. I didn't know what was going on. And then we all figured out, we're under attack here after what happened. Chain reaction. Buildings collapse. 93 Shanksville. Pentagon. My goodness. It was something else. But you right there. And I know a lot of folks who are in that city covering this thing. And it was unbelievable. One guy at the station I was about to get to was right there. He was one of the first guys there. He happened to be stationed in the city doing some other things. But he did some reporting for the Riverhead station. And that was really something else. And then I was starting the Riverhead job in October. I think I started right around October the 1st. So I was getting ready. But, man, I'll tell you, quite a scene there, man. Quite a scene.
One other thought. When guys started coming back, right? So after hours and hours and hours there, the blank looks on their faces, right? I mean, it's like, I always attribute it to some of them had like what I said, but doll's eyes, right? We just had these big black pupils, and you just 100-yard stares, 1,000-yard stares, wherever it is, and they go all covered in dust and dirt and they're carrying their bags. I mean, they're all white. Their hair is white. Their glasses, you can't see through them. I mean, it was just, it looked like something from a movie. And you just say to yourself, my God, what the hell's going on down there?
Man, nobody knew. Nobody knew. My goodness. 20 years, Joe. Unbelievable. Hey, let me throw a couple of things at you here. In the remaining time. Joe Jacklin, of course, the crime report. I guess there's a new initiative starting in Nassau that prosecutors say will let people who are facing charges, could be minor, nonviolent offenses, avoid a potential criminal conviction by taking part in a pre-arraignment diversion that replaces, I guess, the court system involvement with programming focused on the rehabilitation and treatment. I've got some mixed thoughts on this. I'm wondering what you're thinking about this. So you got this program that's going to kind of replace the involvement on the courts on. This is where we're going now with this stuff, folks. Joe, what do you think of this stuff?
Well, listen, I am a firm believer in everybody deserves a second chance. It's the ones that have, 20, 30, and 40 different chances that's the ones that I worry about. This is just a trend that's been happening. DAs across the country have been just basically abandoning prosecution and just going for whatever they think is going to be best for everybody else. But what's best for the person who gets arrested may not be best for society. So, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what types of individuals are getting into these programs. I'm assuming most of it will be, you know, drug-related incidents where people have been, you know, with you know, illegal narcotics, that kind of thing. I think, or marijuana. I think those will be the ones that will hopefully, you know, low-level offenses like that. Not people who are selling the stuff, but maybe people who are possession or using it and that kind of thing.
Now, like I spoke about yesterday, with an individual who's running for district attorney. You know, the fact is that, you know, a guy who was supplying and part of the selling process that led to those overdoses, the 9 overdoses and 6 deaths, Joe, in the East End last month. You know, a guy that was let out, who's back out on the street. Can you imagine this? I mean, I'm always a little skittish when it comes to this stuff. That's why. Because that's the system we're in right now. And that's led me to believe the process of being somewhat skittish by letting individuals out in the street when they shouldn't be. So I guess a wait and see here. Hey, what do you think of this with NYPD officers risk being docked pay, Joe, if they do not comply with the order to either get a vaccine or, I guess, subject themselves to weekly testing for the virus? This is a new directive now from the department. What do you think of it? How would you have reacted if still a member, sir?
Well, like I said, I was just hoping that most, if not all, the cops would get the shot just because of the fact of the job that you're dealing with. You're coming into contact with so many people, going in their houses, things that you can get, you know, a whole host of different illnesses and diseases from entering some of the people's house that you've gone to. I just, you know, just for your own personal safety and the safety of your family, I would just encourage them to do it. Forcing people to get it, though, I think this is going to end up in a lawsuit somewhere along the line. And, you know, this is something that might even end up in the Supreme Court one day, that, you know, forcing individuals, you know, for their job status. Now, it's not part of your, you know, job description per se to do this. So I don't know. It's going to get interesting, and I think it's definitely going to end up in the courts.
Of course, with what the President of the United States did yesterday with mandates, a very tricky situation. Of course, you got Republican governors. We'll talk about that later on in the program, coming out in full against what the President said. Joe Jacklin, the crime report. Joe, let's get to dozens of folks last night in Suffolk County speaking out at a legislative hearing against the proposal to protect law enforcement officers. It's under the county's human rights law. Say it could infringe on the right to free speech, create division. Listen, my stance on this is, it's almost like you're on a seesaw. Okay, remember you're on a seesaw as a kid, and what you try and do is have an equal way of playing the game. You're up, you're down. You're up, you're down. But in essence, to me, it's only one way here, because what about the police officers? What about the emergency medical personnel on the scene, the volunteers, the peace officers? Don't they deserve some sort of protection here, Joe? It's unbelievable how sometimes things get so one-sided here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, this whole the whole idea that this even has to be brought up, right? I mean, civility is just a thing of the past, and people just are unbelievably, you know, rude and everything else that you're dealing with in this kind of thing. And you're trying to do a job, and these things have to be even, you know, put out there. It's absolute insanity what's happening with not, and it's just not the cops, right? It's the, like you said, the volunteers, the firemen, the EMS workers, and the like. I mean, you kind of scratch your head. I mean, what a different environment we were in 20 years ago, right? Where we would praise the cops, the firemen, the EMS workers, and everybody else that responded to these things and gave them the you know, what they deserved in that respect. And here we are talking about having to pass a law in order to protect them from harassment and everything else. I mean, right? Talk about a whole 180 there. I mean, I guess we've come full circle. I think if you want to look at it, how we started the show and what we're talking about now.
And I'm so sick of talking about this. Does one not remember Molotov cocktails? Does one not remember a pallet of bricks that are being laid there for folks to take part and do damage. But you know what? Let's just protect those individuals. I'm so tired.
Nobody goes to jail anymore, right? Where's the deterrence? That's what I always ask people. Where's the deterrence?
There's none. You know, it's all about one's rights. Oh, come on. I'm tired of talking about it. I'll tell you another thing. I'm sick over this trial for the former officer, the NYPD officer Joe, and his ex-fiancee. You know, they're accused of killing this police officer's 8-year-old son, Thomas Valva, January 2020. Could be delayed now, 5 months, due to concerns about how COVID could impact the fairness of the proceeding. Please, make sure this kid didn't die in vain, please. Wake up, court system, because these individuals need to be held accountable. I'm tired of the excuse of COVID and the masks and the shields. Accountability here, Joe. An 8-year-old thrown in a garage, 19 degrees. This one made me sick.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I was just kind of like, oh, God. You know, this is, especially we had just gone through a lengthy pretrial hearing over the evidence that was, they were trying to have thrown out. And after all of that, that was all going to be admitted, and it was extremely damaging to the defense's case. And now they get another 5 months to try to figure out how to you know, get out of this kind of, so to speak, kind of thing, right? The lawyers doing what the lawyers will do. And, listen, I think we've been pretty clear on how we feel about these two and where they should be. I don't know, Jay. Let's just hope that this goes through without any other hitches, and just justice needs to be served here.
Key word, justice, accountability. I'll tell you, the excuse, you know, it's always the excuse. Well, you know, COVID and, you know, mask wearing. You know what? Stop it already. Stop it. Joe, I hate to end on that note, but we reflect on a day of 2 decades ago, and you were right there. Great story. Great stories from you. And we'll talk next week, but it's a day. It's a weekend. It really is a weekend of remembering, reflecting, not only where we were, but where we are as the United States of America and where we will be. And hopefully it's in a good spot. Might not look like it at this point in time, but hopefully we can get back on the tracks. You stay well, stay safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
You too, Jay. Have a great weekend.